If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Guys, let's not take too much time. We've been traveling from Dallas all morning and after a weird game. That's pretty much the best way I can describe it. An overtime shootout. The game ends in a 40-40 tie between the Green Bay Packers and Dallas Cowboys. Just hearing 40 points alone, especially from the Green Bay side, I would have figured the Packers will win this game, but that did not happen. And Ryan, I'll let you start it off. What do you make just of what happened Sunday night at AT&T Stadium?
Well, first of all, Dominique, let's explain to the good people who loyally listen to us why we did not have a podcast out first thing Monday. Covering a road night game that ends in a tie, that means it takes all 10 minutes after the 60 minutes of regulation, all 10 minutes of overtime, is one of the roughest things you can do. We didn't get back to the hotel last night until 3 a.m. and had the morning flight. So at some point, at Spoon, I think it was you, at some point someone had a thought of, let's do this when we get back to Green Bay. So here we are. 40 points. Well, they gave up 44 the first 3 weeks. So, yeah, I didn't see that happening. If you would have told me going in that the Packers were to score 40 points on the Dallas Cowboys defense, I would have believed that because I don't think the Dallas Cowboys have a very good defense. I mean, I picked the Packers to win 29-17. I thought they'd be right around that 30-point mark. I would have believed 40 points. But if you would have told me that, I would have also told you in response that the Packers were winning that game by 3 touchdowns. The fact that they also gave up 40 points after giving up 44 points the first 3 games, yes, to the Browns, but also to the likes of Jared Goff of the Lions, Jay Daniels of the Commanders, that was unrecognizable. So I know for me, I can only speak for myself, I'm a bit confused what this team is. I wrote after the game, nobody expected a tie, but in a lot of ways, that's kind of like the perfect way to describe this team through 4 games going into the bye. They are sometimes great, sometimes terrible. They are consistently inconsistent. They do a lot of things really poorly until they do other things really well. They are dead even. That's what this team is. They are a tie, and they have to figure out on the bye week how to make that better and fix that.
So, Spoon, you know, just what are your takeaways and thoughts on the game that the Packers played against the Cowboys?
Well, for my third take here, two of them have been edited out.
Technical
reasons. Kind of like part of the Packers game should have been edited out. I just feel like they're a team that hasn't really figured out how to be great. They have some of the makings of a great team, but they can't finish off teams. They can't win games when they don't play their best. They're still making critical mistakes that are preventable. They're still playing. I think they're playing like a team that thinks it's going to win a wild card and, you know, have to play on the road. You know, they're not in that mentality of, you know, beating every person that challenges you because you are the team to beat. They don't play like that. And they have to figure out a way to play like that because they shouldn't lose the Cleveland Browns and they shouldn't have lost to Dallas. You know, I'll give all the credit to Dak Prescott because he played an amazing game. I mean, just he was the MVP on the field. But, you know, if you can't kick an extra point and you can't return a kickoff for anything and you make dumb mistakes like try to get a first down on first and 15 at your own 30-yard line with 21 seconds left in the half, then that's on you. you know? So yeah. That's their problem right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's what the great teams do. It's 13-0. I mean, through the start of the game, the Packers, you could say they kind of turned it into a home game. Like, it was loud. The fans were into it. That's when you make the extra point, number one. You don't get it blocked. And then your defense plays more free and more loose and can just fly around. You score again. Like, that's what the Lions have done throughout these games. That's what the Eagles do. Like, that's what the great teams do. You put away a team and you don't look back. This Packers team just hasn't found a way to do that. And really, after that block extra point, you could just feel it's like a bubble just kind of popped and it let out so much air. And that really was the name of the game. So for you, Ryan, offensively, you know, what do you make of, you saw 40 points, but what are your thoughts on how Jordan Love kind of responded after he played against Cleveland and how they were able to finally get the run game going late in the game?
You know, what it kind of reminded me of was when you go early to a Major League Baseball game and you watch batting practice. You know, you have these great hitters that are getting tossed softballs and they just smack it out of the park one after another. That's kind of what the Dallas Cowboys passing defense is. It's batting practice. And Jordan Love, to his credit, who is playing outside of one terrible interception in Cleveland, playing at a very high level this year, he treated it like batting practice. I mean, it was easy, right? So I don't know how much to make out of it going forward, because there are going to be much fiercer defenses, specifically pass defenses, that this quarterback and this offense play throughout the season. They took care of what they needed to take care of. They saved the game. Micah Parsons pulled Jordan Love aside after the game, and he thanked them for saving their backside. Because, again, that defense giving up 40 points was just – it was on nobody's bingo sheet. Nobody had that coming. Certainly not the Packers defense themselves. So, they had an idea of, okay, if Jordan Love didn't ball out, they lose that game. And it's a game they should not lose. But ultimately, you know, when there were lulls, I think they still need to figure out how to really prioritize Tucker Kraft as much as possible. He is their best player. He needs to be – not just a focal point every week, needs to be a focal point every drive. It's just different when he touches the football. And their best drives seem to involve Tucker Kraft. Figure out how to maximize him for all he's worth, especially until Christian Watson and Jaden Reed come back later in the season. I mean, that's something there. The bye week's coming at a good time for a lot of reasons, but the most obvious is because they need their offensive line to get healthy. And certainly that would have mattered potentially, although it was Rasheed Walker that gave up the sack fumble to James Houston, that could have mattered on a number of plays. But I don't know. I think Jordan Love's playing at a really high level. I also think that he took batting practice against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Spoon, for you, just when you saw the offense as a whole for the offensive line, you know, first half it was rough. Second half, some of the guys in particular, like Jordan Morgan, Darian Kennard, it seems like they settled in a little bit better. And then, obviously, you know, Romeo Doubs has the hat trick. They got the running game going. You know, obviously, we can talk about the game management coming up. But just overall, you know, what did you kind of see from the offense?
It shows you what Jordan Love can do with protection. When he's protected, he is an outstanding quarterback. I mean, he will find receivers. He's got the arm. He's patient. He knows how to go through his progressions and figure out who's the open guy. But when he's under pressure, he's not there yet. You know, Dak Prescott was under pressure quite a bit. He wasn't getting sacked, but he was getting the ball out of his hand. Now, part of that was their game plan, too. Early on, LaFleur had a great game plan. They just ran screens. They knew the Cowboys were going to be hard charging up at, you know, trying to get after Love, keep both safeties back, which they do, and they ran – all these screens to Jacobs, to Kraft, to Golden, and it was very effective. And then after they scored two touchdowns, it's almost like they didn't know what to do. Like, okay, we expended this great call list, and now what do we do? Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, after you've shown a team, you know, your initial game plan, then you've got to be able to just settle down and play really good football, and they couldn't. The offensive line is just a, you know, it's just too inconsistent. If they could ever get the protection he got against Detroit and against Washington, you know, they could be a really dangerous offense. But until they get those guys back, you know, and it's, I don't know what it says that they can't plug in some guys and still be able to be halfway decent. I agree with you, Dom. I think in the second half they settled down a little bit and they were able to create some holes. But I think, you know, Dallas's defense got tired, as did the Packers' defense. And if, you know, if Love's going to be successful, you got to protect him.
Yeah.
It's just, he's just one of those guys who's going to be so much better. Rodgers was really good when teams blitzed him. He saw it coming from everywhere. He just knew what was coming, and they stopped. And I'm not sure Love is there yet where he can punish teams for coming at him that aggressively. I think he will be at some point, but he's not there right now.
Yeah. For both of you guys, and Ryan, I'll let you start it off. I don't know what was more confusing when you talked about game management at the end. For one, that there was just zero sense of urgency. But I was also just as confused, I think, listening to Matt LaFleur's comments after the game. It was just kind of like, you know, I don't know what the deal was. You know, what do you kind of make about just that lack of urgency from the game management and just throughout points in the game?
I think that ultimately at the end, Matt LaFleur and the offense were too slow in their operation. But I do think it's a really interesting position for them to be in there, because on one hand, you want to make sure that you give yourself enough time to get seven. On the other hand, if you do not get seven, you absolutely do not want the third and final possession of overtime after a field goal, it's tied, to be Dak Prescott with the football in his hands and the Cowboys having a chance to win the game. So there's a balance to strike there. Now, I thought that for the most part, they ended up striking that balance pretty well until, because at some point you have to decide, okay, we're in range now for seven, let's go. They seem to do that with the no huddle, and they seem to flip that switch at the right time, and then they didn't. And then they went to the screen, to the check down, and that's where they lost me in terms of what they were doing, because that was the time to be aggressive, to go get seven and forget the clock. Speed it up, hit them with everything you got. Don't worry about giving up a third and final possession. And they didn't have the urgency. Matt LaFleur said that the communication has to be better between him, the sideline, and Jordan Love, and then Jordan Love in the huddle. So there were issues going on there. We don't know exactly what they were. But they lacked the urgency at the end to go win. They're very lucky that that pass to Matthew Golden, in the football did not bounce up in the air, and that, because they had 1 second left. They're very lucky they did not lose the game outright on that final play, and that they had that final second for a field goal to actually tie. Now, I get the predicament, but at the end of the day, when you get in position as they did, and the time was initially not a factor at that moment, you have to go get seven. They didn't have the urgency there.
Yeah. Spoon, just, you know, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, so I understood what LaFleur was saying. I didn't buy into his how he was sort of laying the blame. You know, I think in that situation, the quarterback has got to be the guy who gets everybody to the line. Get up to the line. It doesn't matter, you know, if they get up there early and there's still some time to burn, then he just sits there, you know, and lets the clock get down. He should be drilled by a coach of how long one play from the, what yard line were they on, the 12, I think?
Around there, yeah.
You know, how long does a pass into the end zone from the 12 take? 6 seconds, maybe seven. He's seeing the clock. And I think he did get it off. You know, I think he had the presence of mind to get rid of it and knew what the clock was, but it got just too close. And it wasn't, I don't know if everybody was ready. So I think they got to drill that. Everybody up to the line. Doesn't matter if you're going to snap it right away or not. Get up to the line and let Love make the calls, you know, which he did. You could see him, he's signaling and everything, but I didn't see someone going, get up to the line, you know, get up to the line right after the Emmanuel Wilson catch. So I think some of that's on Love, and I think some of it, too, is just confusion from the coaching staff on what exactly they were supposed to do there.
Yeah, and now we can touch on defense very quickly as well, because, again, it's just it adds to the game and how weird it was. Just the entire game, the way it played out, just felt so weird. And just to kind of see the defense and just some of the drives that Dallas was able to sustain, it's like the Cowboys, I mean, they've scored a lot of points this season. Like, they are a solid offense. But even without CeeDee Lamb, it was weird. So, Ryan, for you, I mean, I don't know where you can start, the run defense or – at times the pass rush or the secondary. I don't know. What did you kind of see from that Packers defense?
Well, I think a couple things were going on there. I asked Micah Parsons after the game, like, look, first 25 minutes, you guys gave up nothing. And then it just totally flipped the other way where you needed a Christmas miracle to get off the field. Why was that? And I think that it is a fair point to say that that kind of did reflect Devontae Wyatt going out with the knee injury. That Devontae Wyatt, first three games, if he could put that together for a 17-game season, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. I mean, that's the type of defensive tackle play that he's playing at, and the Packers recognize that. Micah Parsons recognizes that, said that Devontae Wyatt's a dominant player inside. He has been. It was week four last year against Minnesota after a really good three-game start that Devontae Wyatt had the high ankle sprain, and then he wasn't the same guy. It derailed his season until December. The Packers sure need to not have that repeat. They need Devontae Wyatt to rest up over the bye week, get him back, if not for Cincinnati, then at least for Arizona, get him back soon, because he is a very important piece to that defense. It's very obvious watching him the first three games healthy. Heck, even early against Dallas before the injury, why Brian Gutekunst is like, okay, Kenny Clark for Micah Parsons, we have Devontae Wyatt. We're good. That's the type of player he's becoming right now. With that said, you cannot put all of that on an injury. The Cowboys didn't have CeeDee Lamb. Not playing a game without some of your best players is literally part of this league. That happens every single week and for most teams, right? It's very rare you see a lot of continuity when it comes to health. So that can't be an excuse. You have to adjust. And I'll echo Spoon. I think Dak Prescott, two really good quarterbacks, Dak Prescott and Jordan Love, Dak Prescott was the more impressive quarterback. Not because of the numbers, but because pass protection, it's like stolen bases in baseball, right? For years, everyone's like, well, you're stealing off the catcher. No, you're stealing off the pitcher. Pass protection is not on the offensive line. It's on the quarterback. The quarterback makes pass protection. Do you have a quick release? Do you get rid of the football? Can you read and diagnose the field and operate very quickly in and out of the pocket? Dak Prescott put on a master class of that, and it certainly – stymie this Packers pass rush. And you better believe that teams starting with the Bengals with Jake Browning on to Kyler Murray on to, hey, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, when they go to Pittsburgh, you think that Aaron Rodgers might be looking to get rid of the ball really, really fast, which is something that he's at times been loath to do in the past, but has also shown that he can do that at a very high level when he needs to. Like, that is going to be Aaron Rodgers' game plan against this Packers defense is catch and release as quick as possible. He can do that. So that's going to be the game plan from here on out until the back end shows that, hey, you can press man, you can get up in receivers, you can disrupt the timing of routes, and you can cover like that, because they didn't do that on the back end. They way too many freebies against this Cowboys offense, even without CeeDee Lamb. I thought Dak Prescott put on an absolute masterclass of slowing down the pass rush.
Yeah. Spoon, just any thoughts to add on to defensively?
Yeah, I have quite a few thoughts on it. Number one, Dallas had a great plan against Micah Parsons. I mean, they knew what Micah Parsons did well. They know what weaknesses that he has. They knew how to, you know, when to put a tight end over him, when to chip him with the back, when to double him. They mixed it up quite a bit. And then they ran, you know, certain plays off of that protection. So it was a really good job by Brian Schottenheimer. Their knowledge of Micah Parsons was really helpful. The other thing is that the Packers played scared. You know, they played, they were, I think Halfley was terrified about George Pickens on anybody but Keyshawn Nixon. And it sort of proved to be accurate. Any kind of speed against Hobbs or Valentine is dangerous. And if he was going to blitz, he was going to put those guys on an island. And I think he was terrified to do that. I think he also, it was sort of a double-edged sword. Those guys were playing like 10, 12 yards off the receiver because they were so worried about getting beat deep. And then Dallas goes to that quick game and they're just, you know, they're hitting them wide receivers on, you know, 10-yard hitches and they're moving the ball like it's nothing. I think they had a good game plan, and I think Halfley had no answer. He has to figure out, you know, what can he do in those situations to protect his corners, but also get some heat on the quarterback. If four-man rush isn't working, then I don't know. Then you've got to figure out a way to flood zones. Maybe you drop eight instead of seven and let Dak sit back there. But he just didn't come up with anything that shook up that rhythm that they had. And as long as they were blocking Micah Parsons, nobody else was getting to him.
You know, the other thing that they did, and this was smart, there were a handful of times, three or four times, when they took advantage of Micah Parsons' aggressive mentality as a passer, and they ran it at him. And Micah Parsons took an inside speed rush, and there's no contain there. They seem to have just this knack of picking when to do that. And it's not like they didn't shut down Micah Parsons. He played 48 snaps. He had eight pressures, had potentially a game-saving zero-yard sack there on the near the goal line in overtime, chasing down Dak Prescott. He had his moments, but you threw him off just enough. And then with all those double teams and chips, the surprising part of that, and a lot of this I think is about the off coverage, not giving time to get home. But when with the amount of attention that Micah Parsons was getting, Jeff Halfley said during the week, if he gets that kind of attention, you're going to see huge games from Rashawn Gary. You're going to see huge games from Lucas Van Ness. And those guys, Edgerrin Cooper, those guys, they didn't have an impact. And when Micah Parsons is drawing that much attention, those guys have to have an impact. They didn't.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of missed tackles, even from Edgerrin Cooper. I mean, I've never seen him since he's been with the Packers miss that many tackles. I think that was something that was just, again, it was just kind of a bizarre thing more than anything just to see. I mean, the defense started strong, and then, like I said, there were a lot of adjustments made from the Cowboys, and they just did not know how to counter it. So, again, well, that was something that stood out.
What about what Matt LaFleur said? I asked him the same question I asked Micah Parsons about, you know, 25 minutes, you gave up nothing, and then you couldn't stop giving up everything. And to his, you know, this was a fair response. Matt LaFleur said that he needed to really dig into the defensive film this week because he is the offensive play caller. So when the defense is on the field, he's getting ready for the next drive. But he said, without even looking into the film, too many missed tackles. And he said, somehow, some way, someone needs to generate a takeaway. For as good as this Packers defense had been for, we'll call it, you know, 3.5 games this season, they are not getting the football. They are not generating takeaways. That has to change because that is where you don't just hold a team off the board, which is the most important thing, but you change games with those kind of plays, and they've been lacking. They've been missing.
Yeah, I guess as we can start to wrap things up a little bit, I guess it's interesting because it'll be interesting to see what happens as the games continually go along because, offensively, there's been some bright moments. Defensively, like Ryan just kind of said, 3.5 quarters, you know, 3.5 games rather of good moments. Special teams, just no, simply no. There's nowhere, how else to put it. Like, it has just been just like atrocious at times. And this is something that really stood out to me. And it, I guess it kind of sums up the Packers on special teams. I'll look at the Cleveland Browns. Week one against the Bengals, 2 missed kicks. Week two against the Ravens, blocked punt. Week three against the Packers, the Browns were good on special teams. Made a game-winning field goal, blocked it, had good coverage, etc. Then a week later against the Detroit Lions, the Browns give up a punt return for a touchdown. So if that isn't a red flag, at least in my opinion, I don't know what is. There's been penalties. There's been the inconsistencies. Like, I know you're throwing rookies into the return game with Savion Williams and Matthew Golden. But yeah, I mean, that, like, that's a problem. Someone needs to be telling these guys the kickoff rules, when to fair catch, when to run it, and beyond. You know, Spoon, just go.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's Visacha's decision to do that. Now, of course, they don't want to tax Keyshawn Nixon too much, but why in, you know, heaven's name was he not on the field on the kickoff return, on the very last kick return? I just cannot fathom that.
Great point.
You put a rookie back there in overtime. You know, we saw him change and go to Romeo Doubs. Why wouldn't you throw Nixon back there? I wish I could have asked LaFleur. I wish there were time to have asked him, but that's like a no-brainer. You know, you need a 40-yard return there. And, you know, Savion Williams was struggling with whether to take the ball out or not. And, you know, Keyshawn Nixon would have taken the ball out no matter what. And he was going to try to make a big play. So I don't understand that. I don't understand how a week after you had a field goal blocked on the last play, on your second kick of the day, you have a guy walk right through the gut, hardly even blocked, and probably could have blocked it with his chest. He was so far into the backfield. I don't know how that happens. I read in your story, Dom, that he went between Musgrave and Brant Banks, but those are not inexperienced guys. Brant Banks was on the protection team in week one. He wasn't active in week two, but here he is back on it. So it's not like he hadn't had snaps in that situation. You know, after that, you know, they were pretty good on the block team, but you just don't see them making any plays, and they don't force any plays.
They don't. And another thing that I thought about too, as far as with special teams, they just, like, they're just hurting the Packers, especially you looked at how the defense was playing in that fourth quarter. After Jordan Love throws the third touchdown to Romeo Doubs, what was it, 34-30 or something like that, they give up a 46-yard return. And then in four plays, the Cowboys score. Like, yep. I don't know what else to say. They're killing them right now.
That whole side got caved in. I don't know what happened. I really want to look at it again, because either someone got out of place or the Cowboys just had a great plan of making it look like it was going left and then he took it to the right. Because if you look at it, there's just a tunnel, you know, right down that sideline. And, you know, if McManus doesn't make that tackle, I don't know. And they're lucky he didn't get hurt. I mean, he was shaken up, but that would have been something if he had gotten hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, the good news is it's not like the Philadelphia Eagles have good special teams or anything. Oh, wait. Last week, they literally win a game on a blocked field goal against the Rams. And then what do they do this past game? They open with a blocked punt touchdown against the Bucs. The Eagles are the team that the Packers and everyone else in the NFC are chasing. Can you imagine? Right? I mean, the difference in the two special teams units are astronomically light years apart right now. If they have to go through Philly to get to a Super Bowl this year, Tell me if you heard this before. Packers special teams might end the season.
Yeah, there's no other way to put it. So as we wrap it up, guys, any final words, final thoughts before Spoon can finally get home?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I think that what we've seen the last 2 weeks is the difference between a team that has the talent to be great and an actually great team, right? The Packers, there was a lot of excitement. Jordan Love's third season as a starter, back-to-back playoff appearances with the league's youngest roster, and then you add Micah Parsons. And I think that just automatically everyone kind of expected, well, that's the missing piece. This is a great team now. And I'll even put myself in this mix. I forget that young teams have a rite of passage. They don't just get automatically crowned, even if you add Micah Parsons. You have to go through that process. And I have no idea if this team will or not. What's very clear is that they haven't right now. Now, I've been thinking a lot going into this week five bye. Last year at this time, the Philadelphia Eagles were 2-2. They had just lost 33-16 in Tampa Bay. They went into a week five bye. They were on nobody's real radar as being a dominant team in the NFC. And then they win their next 10 games out of the bye, and they end up winning the Super Bowl. I really feel like that more than anything, even more than getting healthy and resting up, that is the reason why this bye comes at the right time. Usually no team wants a week five bye. It's way too early in the season. It's a death march after the bye. But this team has to figure out, they got to look themselves in the mirror, man to man, and they have to decide what kind of team they're going to be. Are they going to be a team? You know, the last 2 weeks, they got the best of the Cleveland Browns, who were 0-2, fighting desperately to avoid going 0-3 at home. And then they clearly got the best of the Dallas Cowboys, who knew Micah Parsons was in the building. And for all the conversation about Micah Parsons' return, the Cowboys also had something to prove, and they were also at home. And that's not an excuse for this team, because the reality is that in neither situation, in neither game, did the Packers match the urgency of the Cleveland Browns and the Dallas Cowboys. That's where they lost the game. They did not have the urgency to go out there and take it. And that's something that at this point, you don't see a Philadelphia Eagles doing, right? You don't see a great team, a championship material team, lacking the urgency, lacking the execution to go out there and win a game. That is what makes a great team, not just talent. You have to execute it. We've not seen that from this team. They are not a great team right now. What they are is a tie. There's great moments. There's bad moments. They have great talent. They have poor execution. You can't have it both ways. So they have to figure out in this bye. And let's be honest, coming out of the bye, the schedule opens up in a way that there's winnable games. They can go on a win streak, but just because they can doesn't mean that they will. They have to decide that's the kind of team they're going to be. And if they don't, they won't be that kind of team. It really is that simple, but they have not gotten to that point yet, and they need to.
Yeah, basically, they didn't play lights out like this room that I'm in right now. There were no lights out. Spoon, any final words or thoughts?
Yeah, just, you know, to piggyback on the special teams discussion we had, I remember back, it was like 1994 or something like that. Mike Holmgren's special teams coach was really embattled. And now he was younger and – not at nearing the end of his career like Bisaccia is, but Holmgren decided that every single assistant coach was going to be involved in special teams, in coaching special teams. So he had every assistant monitoring and making sure everyone was doing their techniques. So he had the defensive line coach out there, helping to rush. He had the offensive line coach helping to block. He had the wide receivers coaches, you know, helping with returns. I don't think in that case there was no stone unturned in how they were coaching their guys. And regardless of whether it's Bisaccia's fault or not, you got to do something. You have to do something to make them better. And just thinking, oh, well, they're going to get better because Rich Bisaccia's a veteran and he's been there. I don't know if that's a winning formula. I think sometimes you got to take some drastic measures, and getting all those coaches involved might be it. I don't know. It worked back then. It just made me think of it while we were talking about it, how you just have to do something.
Yeah. Hey, Spoon, what's the definition of insanity? Continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best way to put it, because like it's technique that we're talking about. We're talking knowledge. It's like, are they telling Savion Williams, this is the landing zone? This is what happens if the ball bounces into the end zone compared to when it's in the air. One, you can go to the 20-yard. One is the 35. Telling Matthew Golden, if defenders are coming at you, don't try to make a spin move. It's just so many little things that, again, they just got to get corrected. They need to be teaching it. So, I don't
blocking
know.
Blocking the inside man. Blocking the inside man on an extra point attempt.
Yeah, I mean, your protection, you got to have a wall. You can't go up. You got to stay low. Maybe I should just be coaching. No, I shouldn't. I'm not going to get that far. But I couldn't play it, but at least I know the rules and the regulations and how you need to have good leverage. So I just wouldn't be able to execute it, but oh well. So, guys, thank you all, though. Really do appreciate it. And, you know, we'll hear from Matt LaFleur this week. But it is the bye week, so, again, they'll have time to get healthy and see what happens as they get ready for the Bengals without Joe Burrow and much more throughout this season. So, guys, again, I do appreciate it. Get a little bit of rest. And we thank each and every one of you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.